Now, for those of you listening online, I will start over. Actually, I don't know that I will start over. Christ the King Sunday. I'm going to give you a dialogue today between two leaders. Leaders are interesting, whether you're a believer or not. Typically, leaders, when you come into a setting, leaders or people in charge will bump into each other. But real leaders will figure out who can take them somewhere. And real leaders discover real leaders, and it creates a fascinating dialogue because the ego slips away, and they can learn from one another. Today's dialogue is just exactly that. The first slide where you see Jesus and the question of Pontius Pilate. Jesus has been brought before Pilate by the leaders of the Jewish temple, of the Jewish community, by the leaders of the people. And Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" This is what they're saying, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus simply says, what makes you ask that? It appears that these two individuals are having a dialogue between leaders, that one recognizes one and one recognizes the other, and thus the conversation begins. I can hear the voice of Pilate in his head, "You don't look like a king. From all that I've heard, you don't act like a king." People are in an uproar out there. But some people, in fact, it seems most people really like you, but there's this group that doesn't. What's the deal? Are you the king of the Jews? I don't see you as a problem causer. You don't seem to be against me. And I have to tell you, Jesus, you certainly don't look very threatening. Here you are. There is very little in the persona of Jesus that would indicate that he's against Pontius Pilate. There's very little to indicate that he's against the government of the day. In fact, he seems to hang out with the downtrodden, with the weak, with the sick, with the poor. Pilate would recognize this is not the path to greatness. If you're a Jewish person, hanging out with the people Jesus hangs out with really doesn't constitute a worry. He's definitely not inciting a riot, for it seems that the people who follow Jesus are becoming more peaceful, more at ease, except for the zealots, more compliant. There is no indication that Jesus is seeking to create a division between Judaism and Romanism. I made that word up. However, there is every indication that Jesus is just not bothered by Pilate. Pilate would recognize this as a leader. He is not a threat to me, and I'm not a threat to him. He knows I have this power. He seems to have this power of the people liking him. There is every indication that Jesus is walking in peace. Are you the king of the Jews? Who tells you that? This is a man walking in peace in the midst of the ruler of the known day. There is every indication that Jesus is just not really threatened by those that don't like him. Oh, so they don't like me. Well, next day. There is every indication that Jesus is not losing any sleep over the people who are against him. Our next slide reads, "My big problem." This is Pilate's dilemma. For he's meeting here with a leader. He's meeting here with somebody who they think is a king. He's meeting with somebody who is quite possibly an equal, yet not an equal. Who's quite possibly just as powerful, but in a different way. Who seems to calm and quiet people's souls without an army. If I am Pilate, I am both mystified and amazed and somewhat envious. And yet, I have no doubt that I can squash him like a bug if I want to. So, my big problem, if I'm Pontius Pilate, it's not really a problem. Everything this guy is doing seems to not threaten me. If anything, the people are living better lives, walking in peace, and actually, I don't have to send in the army as much. My big problem is Jesus seems to be making people feel happier. They're not fighting me. My problem, if I'm Pilate, is Jesus is making many happy and a few angry. 42 years I've done this, and I have been amazed over the years how churches sometimes make decisions not on the wishes of the masses, but on the lack of wish of a few. And I have sat in church councils where we would discuss and come up with an idea and the possibility of something that would benefit all of us. And then someone would say, well, you know, brother so-and-so is not going to like that. And somebody will go, well, we don't need to do it then. Yeah. We're talking with two totally different kinds of leaders here. Jesus pauses to Pilate and says, the next slide reads, where are you getting your information, Pilate? Pilate, he's talking to him like a guy, like an ordinary fella. I've been in this sitting a time or two, and it always amazes me. Once I'm sitting in a woman's house making wicker baskets. It's you know, pastors visit old people kind of a thing back in the day. This is like 35 years ago. And another fella comes in, and he's visiting, going through the town, and he sits, and she fixes us iced tea and pimento cheese sandwiches on somewhat stale bread. You know, pimento cheese has to be, there's no middle ground. It's either very good or very bad. And believe it or not, this fits somewhere in between. So I'm visiting with this guy. We're making these little baskets. We're enjoying the company of the couple. And I say to him, after a while, I said, well, Wallace, what do you do? He said, well, I'm the governor. I'm like, I'm just the 26-year-old preacher of the church with seven people. And we had just been talking like adults, just visiting back and forth. Jesus, not courage, but the self-identity that he is God. And even though all of his time is spent with those deemed unacceptable, and that's ticking off the leadership. Well, if he keeps doing that, that's making us mad. Pilate and he are having a non-threatening, somewhat equal dialogue. Pilate, where you get this information? Are you seeing the peaceful crowds sitting around me? They just sit and I talk, by and large. Are you seeing a less manageable people because of what I'm doing? Do you see the people who follow me threatening anyone? Pilate, are you feeling a threat from me? And who's complaining, Pilate? That's what this question is. Where are you getting your information? Who's complaining? And why is this message that I tell people to walk in peace, to give to Caesar what is Caesar, to, if the soldier says, carry my coat for a mile, carry it for him too? I preach a message of compliance and love and caring, need meeting. Why does that scare people? And then the question, where do you get your information? Jesus is basically saying, Pilate, how does this affect you? It just seems to make everything you do easier. It just seems to make everything you do go better. Pilate says, I'm not a Jew. Your nation, it's them who want you gone. What have you done? My next slide is a book. Isn't the next slide a book, May, called Falling Upward? You know, I can't see. If I'm looking out, I'll fall over. Falling? I would fall downward, of course. The human ego prefers anything, just about anything, to falling, failing, changing, or dying. The ego is that part of us that loves the status quo even when it's not working. It attaches to the past and the present, and it fears the future. This book by Richard Rohr is a fascinating and easy read, and that speaks a whole lot of truth to the third party in the dialogue between Jesus and Pilate, even though they're not present. Had a member once. It was 150 years ago. He's in his 40s, and he has his car from high school parked in the garage. He doesn't park his car in the garage because the car from high school is parked in the garage. His wife enters the house every time it rains, in the rain, soaking wet, because his car from high school is in the garage. Not only has it dry rotted, the tires have dry rotted to where they're flat. The car is rusting. The car does not. And I said, tell me, are you going to fix it? He said, oh, it's so far beyond fixing. I said, why don't you get rid of it? He said, I can't. That's what I drove in high school. That's when I was the king. It's still in the garage. Old mentor, friend, and my therapist, Dr. David Formwalt, in settings like that says, how's that working for you? Is your wife happier because the car in the garage doesn't run and she gets out of the car in the rain? No. Is the car ever going to be fixed so you can use it again? No. How's that working for you? I have to admit, I'm headed to a different car. Sometimes I say new car, sometimes that's not completely true, but I'm headed to a different car. My car is 14 years old, and guys, we get an emotional relationship with our vehicles. Now, I haven't named this one, but it's my space, it's my car, it's my comfort, it's my thing, and after 14 years, it's dying. I will probably ask John to do a funeral for it. You guys have felt that way about your vehicles. You name your boats, you name your planes, you name your cars. 14 years old, and I have received the news for about 2 years now that it would cost more to fix than it's worth. My gas gauge doesn't work. I ran out of gas the other day. I was down from the library, past the gas station, May, and I pulled in. I could feel it going out, and I got off, and some guy comes out of his house, and he gives me a gallon of gas. He said, I just bought a battery more. You can have it. Just get it out of my garage. And I'm upset with the car because it ran out of gas. I'm ticked. Not only do I have to take gas from a stranger, I don't have any money to pay him for it. I'll probably go by and leave something in his mailbox, but I may be too ashamed to do that. I'll think about it. I'm mad at the car because it ran out of gas. Who's responsible to put gas in the car? Yes. It's the same conversation I had with the guy in the emergency room. The cardiologist called me, not the patient, the cardiologist. He said, come see so-and-so. He is being defiant. He is refusing to take any medications. His blood pressure's through the roof. His cholesterol's out the window. And I walk in there, and he said to me, and I quote, I ain't taking no medicine, and that doctor doesn't know anything. I said, I'd charge double for stupid funerals. Ain't nobody telling me what to do. That's the third party in the conversation. Their world is changing. I don't know that it's as much it's changing as it is they're being drawn to a different leader, a different type of leader. A type of leader that doesn't cater to the clean, to the pretty, to the money. A type of leader who's drawn to the broken, to the wounded, to the hurting, to the healing. The kind of leader that's drawn to me, who has been ashamed, who has thought of not living and found a reason to live. And so the slide that says, Jesus, what have you done? What is your oops? Why have you ticked off those people who don't want anything to change? In the middle of John's gospel, there's a verse where Caiaphas says, isn't it better for one man to die than for all of this to change? It's the mantra of the church. A long time ago, I had a lovely choir, a magnificent choir, I tell you. They could sing, and they were so happy being together. They did not do a thing wrong, just enjoyed one another. But they never invited anybody to be a part. And out of the 20 of them, two or three moved to be closer to their kids. Two of them got older and had to go into a nursing facility. A couple of them got sick and died, and a couple of them just couldn't sing anymore because of illness, ailment, and throat issues. Out of the last eight, three of them discovered they had dementia, and they sang on anyway, I tell you. Not always the same song the other choir sang, but they sang on. Then there was the other couple. Oh, they were so pleasant and so much fun. They stood up there, but they didn't sing any longer. Every Sunday, we would hear them leave church, and there was a green exit button. You've seen those in businesses where our church had one. And instead of pushing the green exit button, they would pull the red fire alarm every Sunday. The choir got down to about 3 in 5 years, and one of them said, "At least we've stood together." Across the country, our churches and businesses who have so fought to have it their way. And there is nothing sadder than for John, myself, and clergy around the world to perform a funeral that we didn't have to do, but simply because the individual was defiant. "Jesus, what have you done to make these people angry?" And Jesus simply says, "My kingdom's not from here. My kingdom's not from here. And what are the signs of the Christ kingdom? Peace, love, joy, mercy, grace, hope, gentleness, togetherness." Can't you hear Pilate in his head going, "You're making my life so much easier. Why can't they get on this?" You see, for the fear was Jesus would incite the people and the Romans would come in and kick all of their selves. I know. It puzzles me. It may not be sought after signs of Christians in America today, peace, love, joy, harmony, but it had better be the signs of the ministry of Foley United Methodist Church. This is our God-given space. This is where we live out the testimonies of our stories to where I was and now I am. Or here's an even more powerful story for the world today. I have been, I still am, but it's getting better. For like me, if you have lived with depression and anxiety, you manage it. It rarely completely goes away. You manage it. I say with all humility, with all regret, and with all pride, I take the pill. Jesus, the next slide. So you are a king. So you are a king. He would say to him, "You say that I'm a king. This is why I'm here. Why is he here?" The leaders of the church could not see that he was the king. They were afraid he might be a king. They were afraid that they were right and he could be the one. But Pilate is not a believer. And he sees Jesus. He sees the life lived. He makes a connection. And Jesus will say in the next slide, "May whoever accepts the truth will listen to my voice." The truth. What Jesus said, who Jesus hung out with is the truth. How Jesus behaved amongst people is the truth. How Jesus behaved with Pilate is the truth. What rules Jesus broke is the truth. Truth is a very big picture. It's not just the spoken word of God, but it's who spoke it. It's who lived it. For Jesus is the reality, and Jesus is the truth, and Jesus is the life, and Jesus' life is the way to live. The next slide simply says, Jesus said, can only be understood in light of how Jesus lived. You will never understand your Bibles, and I will say it again and again, until you understand the personality of one who spoke the Gospels. That is truth. If I could take you on a path that I have walked, I read some of our signs today. There are a lot of us who could take people on a path, but honestly, we would hope that you would never go down that path. If there were some way that we who offer testimony today, if there were some way that we could tell you to change, to transform, to seek help, to look for guidance without hitting the brick wall, without running into the immovable force of life. We would. But sadly, most of us have to come totally undone until we reach up, look up, and seek out the face of God. We don't find God in our holiness. We don't find God in our goodness. Most often we find God in our pain and in our sin. For then we begin to grasp the power of grace. And if we can grasp it so fully and so totally that even though shame never disappears completely, we feel the washing of God's grace every day. Every day. And I tell you, there are days it rushes back like a storm, that it rushes back like a wave. And yet there is the voice of God, I've got you. I've got you, Bill. It's going to be okay. You will not drown when the waters rise. Christ, the King, lives in you, around you, in front of you, behind you. As you live and breathe, Christ is King. Amen.